Back a long, long time ago, I was 4 years old. That was about 20 years ago. I made a trip. My sister was in the first grade, and back in those days, in the dark ages, you didn't go to the doctor very often. In fact, I'm not sure that either of us had been to the doctor until we went. It was time for us to start first grade, and then we had to have shots. And so we went, and they did different tests on children before they could enter school, and one of them was an eye test, and my sister's eye test determined that she had a seeing problem. And I guess must have been the closest place where there was an optometrist was Natchez, Mississippi, and that was 18 miles from where I lived. And we went over, and she had an eye exam, and it turned out that she was legally blind. And it's kind of interesting. You think about how could somebody have that poor vision and not be aware of it? Well, the reason is because that's all she knew. And she thought everybody saw just exactly the way that she did. And I think there might be an application to us spiritually to that. But they ordered some glasses, and I remember my mother telling it so many times, one of those two things. But she got her new glasses, and we were on the way home, and we were crossing the river bridge, Mississippi River Bridge there at Natchez on the way home. And she looked down at the water below, and she just cried out and said, "Mama, there's boats down there." And my mother cried all the way home. And if you're a parent, you can understand that. A lot of you have been involved in stating what you're thankful for 30 days. I've seen some of you posting it on Facebook and so forth, and that's a really neat thing. One of the things that I'm thankful for is that God gave man the intelligence and the ability to shape a piece of glass to enable those of us with imperfect vision to see perfectly. And then a little bit later to make it into a little plastic piece that you can put in your eye and see. And even now, implants and laser surgery and so forth. I've thought many, many thousands of times in my life how difficult it would have been if I had been born and lived before there were glasses, before there was any way to correct that vision. Probably with a number of years ago, I wouldn't have lasted very long because it was kind of survival of the fittest, so it didn't matter how bad you were. If you couldn't see, then you weren't going to last very long. But I think about, I've always been real sensitive to the idea of blindness and not being able to see well. It's always been pretty near and dear to my heart. And the Bible and Jesus talked about spiritual blindness. We've been in a series of lessons talking about how people react and respond when they face the truth. In some cases in the gospel, it was when they encountered Jesus. Today it would be when someone shares with us or we read from God's word the gospel and truth and how we respond to that. There are people who are spiritually blind in our world. As a matter of fact, everybody in the world is spiritually blind except God's children, because He's the only one that has the ability to correct our vision. And everybody else sees the same way, so they think it's normal, but it's not. And it's a really distorted way to view God's world and people and relationships. And there are a number of reasons that people are blind. One is because there's lots of folks who don't want to see. John 3:19 said, "Men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil." John 1 said, "Light came into the world." and people didn't recognize it. And then he said, men love darkness rather than light. And so they don't want to see. They don't want to hear the gospel. They don't want to talk about it. And then there are those who are unable to see because Satan has blinded them. It says in 2 Corinthians 4:4, the God of this age has blinded the minds of those who don't believe, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Jesus should shine in unto them. And so Satan has a way of getting us to swallow his philosophies, and it makes us blind to the gospel. And then, even more seriously, there are those who are blind as a punishment from God. Because we have handled truth so loosely because it has not been precious to us, then 2 Thessalonians 2:10 through 12 says, they perish because they refuse to love the truth and so be saved. And for this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they'll believe the lie. And so that all will be condemned who have not believed the truth, but who delighted in wickedness. So there's a lot of reasons that people are blind in the world. Jesus warned that in the last days there would be a mixture of belief and unbelief, of those who could see and those who couldn't. And he showed that in the parables that we just alluded to in Matthew chapter 13. And then we began in Matthew chapter 13, verse 53, and we began to see illustrations of some who encountered Jesus who were blind and others who encountered Jesus and their eyes were opened. And so we see people today that fall in those very same categories. And there were 8 illustrations of that. And in this particular one, in Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 1, our scripture reading this morning, the Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him. Matthew 16, 1. That this is going to prove to be the last invitation opportunity that the Pharisees have that comes from Jesus, because from now on, when Jesus meets with them, he's going to condemn them harshly from this point on. And if you look, and you'll see why, and there's a change here in Matthew chapter 16, verse 4, at the conclusion of this particular incident, he says, Jesus left them, talking about the Pharisees and Sadducees, he left them and went away. This is the first time that this particular word is used in the New Testament, this word, he left them and went away. It literally means to forsake or to abandon. This time, after this encounter with the Pharisees and Sadducees, when Jesus walked away, as he was leaving the room, he reached and pulled the plug, and it became total darkness behind him. And he didn't come back to them. He abandoned them at this point. They were beyond hope. It didn't matter what they saw or what evidence was presented to them. It had become obvious that they were blind and they wanted to remain blind. And so we're going to see some characteristics of those who are blind and who will remain blind. First of all, they seek the darkness. As you look at these two groups of people, the Pharisees and Sadducees, you turn to Acts chapter 23, or you don't have to turn there, you'll remember the incident that Paul had come back to Jerusalem, and there were some Asian Jews who were there who saw him and a Gentile companion in Jerusalem, and they assumed that he had taken that Gentile into the court of the temple. And so they were looking for a reason to persecute him anyway, to kill him anyway. And so they began to stir the crowd up, and they said, this guy has polluted our temple. And they stirred everybody in Jerusalem up, and the whole massive crowd came, and they grabbed Paul, and they took him off, and they were in the process of killing him when word came to the Roman centurion who had been stationed there, and he sent an escort down to rescue him, and they came in and they pulled Paul away from him before they could kill him. And he put him in protective custody, as it were, and found out, by the way, that he was a Roman, so he treated him with some respect. But he also needed to know what had caused these Jews to be so upset. So he told the Jews to call their Sanhedrin council together and that they would make their accusations against Paul, and the Romans would be there observing what was going on. So here he is before the council. He walks in, and obviously you've got a lot of hatred here. They've already made their mind up that they want to kill him. And so Paul looks around him, and it says he perceived that there were both Pharisees and Sadducees there on that council. And so he said, "Brethren, the reason that I'm called on trial today here is because of my belief in the resurrection." And then he took two steps back, and he didn't have to say anymore. Because the Pharisees all of a sudden decided he wasn't such a bad guy after all. And the Sadducees became even more insistent on they had to do something to this guy. And so it got to the point where literally the two groups had hold of him, and there was some fear that he was going to be killed, torn apart. And so again, the Romans had to come and rescue him. But there were two groups of people who had an intense hatred for one another. But interestingly, as politics makes strange bedfellows, these people all of a sudden had something overriding their differences. They had a commonality, and that was they knew that they had to kill. If they were going to retain their power and so forth over the people and control over the people, they had to kill Paul. And so they got together, and in this case, they came to Jesus, having now determined the very same thing about him prior to what happened in Acts there. And you think about what they had to overlook in order to get together to try to accomplish this. First of all, they had to overlook their theology. The Pharisees were the fundamental conservatives who believed in the literal interpretation of the law and the prophets and the tradition of the elders as had been compiled in the Talmud. We talked about this a few weeks ago. And then the Sadducees were the liberals who accepted Scripture only. But they didn't accept it as being literal. And so they spiritualized it. And also their social standing. The Pharisees tended to be the common people and tended to be rather poor. The Sadducees were the aristocracy. They were the politicians, and they became wealthy because they ran the government and operated temple concessions and also had trade agreements with the nations around them. Their heritage, the Pharisees, sprang up from an intertestamental group found by the very last ones in the Maccabean family called the Hasidim, which means holy or pious ones. The party was literally founded originally to oppose the priestly party that had wanted to get along with the Greeks. And so this group of rebels came along opposed to this, and they came to be known as the Pharisees. They wanted to keep their heritage pure. The Sadducees loved Gentile culture and all the things that came along with it. Their houses were decorated with Greek urns and other beautiful things that they grew attached to, and that Pharisees wouldn't have anything to do with those things. And so although these two parties hated one another, they managed to get back together to attack Jesus. And so the blind Pharisees went and got the blind Sadducees, and here they are. And we know what's ultimately going to happen. And so they seek darkness, and they deny the light. They were seeking a sign from heaven. They came and asked him, they tested him by asking him to show them a sign literally out of heaven. And I've thought before, I wish that Jesus had called for a lightning bolt that had singed the hair off every one of their heads, you know. Would that have been a sign from heaven, you know? Yeah, I would have liked that, wouldn't you? But Jesus didn't operate that way. And I'm thankful he didn't, because I wouldn't have any hair on my head either. And some of others of us might not. He himself was the sign from heaven, Emmanuel, God with us. But they only wanted to discredit him, and they were trying to trap him. They only wanted to curse the light. And it might, here's a little piece of information that might help us understand, after all the miracles that Jesus had performed in Judea and Galilee by this time, 2 years he'd been performing miracles, how is it that they could come and they could ask him another miracle, and they said, "Give us a miracle from heaven"? What does that mean? Well, evidently, they had a superstition that God only could perform heavenly miracles. But these on the earth, such as anything to do with the physical body healings and so forth, these could have demons behind them that could do this. And so they're saying, in essence, we're dismissing all the miracles you've done up to this point. Show us one from heaven and then we'll know. And you think, yeah, right. You see in this that what men worship, the basis of our understanding, where we go in times of difficulty for solutions to our problems. Some people run to philosophy or science or human intellect, and men seek darkness rather than the light. Still, today. They plunge even deeper into darkness, verse 2 and 3. Jesus responds, when evening comes, you say it'll be fair weather for the sky is red, and in the morning today it'll be stormy, you say, for the sky is red and overcast. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. And we say the same thing, don't we? Red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky in the morning, sailor take warning. Guess where that came from? Yeah. And so he said, you're able to see all these physical things. And by the way, these people had just killed John. Keep that in mind. And now they've got to get Jesus. The Son is here. There are many religious leaders who make lots of phenomenal claims, but they don't know how a person becomes a child of God. We plunge ever deeper into darkness. In verse 4, he's going to wind this up by saying, a wicked and adulterous generation looks for a miraculous sign, but none will be given it except the sign Jonah. And by the way, if you go back to chapter 12, you find out that these people, or at least their cohorts, had asked exactly this same question one time before, and Jesus had given them the same answer. And he had explained it even further. A wicked and adulterous generation. Jesus had been looking for faith. He turned the last year of his life, the last several months of his life, he turned his face toward Jerusalem, and he's looking for faith. And he travels here, and he didn't find it there, and he moves on. And he traveled here, and he didn't find it there, and he moves on. And he goes here, and he didn't find it there, and he moves on. The crowds were superficial in their curiosity. He'd started out in his hometown, and he couldn't do many miracles there because they were offended at him. Herod had been afraid of him because of the sins of his past life. The scribes and Pharisees had been offended at his message. The great crowds of thousands and thousands of people that had come were only superficial as long as he gave them some good fried fish and hush puppies, and they'd stay with him. But when he quit, then they had all they wanted of him. Mark chapter 8, verse 12 gives us an insight that we don't have anywhere else. It says, relating this same incident, when they said that, when they said, give us a sign from heaven and we'll believe, Mark says, he sighed deeply. Can't you see? He sighed deeply. And he said, there'll be no sign given except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And you go back to chapter 12, verse 39 through 41, in case there's any doubt about what that sign is, it's the resurrection. One day they're going to believe. One day every knee is going to bow, but it's going to be too late for them because they insisted on living in darkness their whole life, and whenever they saw the light, they cursed the light. They didn't want to live with the light. And it says, Jesus left them and went away. And on the way out the room, he reached and unplugged the light. And they're destined to live in darkness for the rest of their lives. Because they rejected the light. This is how some today respond when faced with truth. Do you realize that there are not enough signs and miracles in heaven or on earth to persuade people who keep asking for a sign? They'll find some reason to reject the evidence that there is right in front of them. There are still people that way today. He's never coming back to try to persuade them again. They were blind, and they will never, never see the light. Two kinds of people in this world. We're all blind. We're all blind. But there are some, when faced with the truth, will respond positively to that truth, and Jesus will give us eyes to see. And we will see spiritual things that the world cannot see. And we will accept things that are not of this world that the world cannot, will not accept. And so there's two kinds of people in the world. Those that are blind and will remain blind, and those that are blind and will be made to see. And the question for me and you is, which category are we in? You're blind and I'm blind. Until the light comes. And how do you respond to it? While we stand and sing.